And don't we, aren't we that way? We think we're something other than, But Alcoholics Anonymous, if you stick around, we'll straighten you out. But I went to this AA woman's meeting in San Clemente, and I was sharing that I was going to have this opportunity to meet this man that was my earthly father. And I was so angry and so hurt by him that I was sure I was going to harm him. And so the group got together, the women in Alcoholics Anonymous got together and talked to me and shared with me, and the phone rang at this club. And the phone was in the back, the phone was ringing, and the secretary of the group got up. They didn't have, chair people, they had secretaries, okay. And they and then they had leaders of meetings, but they weren't called co and all that kind of stuff. This is old time stuff. Anyways, secretary got up, she said, "It's probably your father." And everybody started giggling, and that kind of got me out of a lighter mode. But it was. He traced me down to an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, okay? Because I believe my brother told him that she's probably in an AA meeting, she got sober. And he had tried Alcoholics Anonymous in the very beginning, way back in the 50s, probably 53 or 52 or 51, somewhere like that. It had been established, but that's when he had gone, and I'll tell you a little bit more about what he said to me after I met him. I was stunned. I didn't know what to do. I didn't want to answer the phone. And every woman in that meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous came into the kitchen area, which was not very big, crowded around with me, and said, "Cindy, you could start it clean. You could start a clean slate with your father if you give him this opportunity." And I thought, okay. And I answered the phone, and he said, "This is your father." I said, "I know, and I'm going to meet you, and we'll talk so we can have a clean slate." And I hung up the phone, and I thought, that ain't going to happen. I'm going to go there. I'm going to rip him a new one, And so this young man, of course, that 13-step thing that we're so forewarned about, do not get in relationships in your first year. Well, I went against every rule there ever was, and I got immediately involved, said, "I will take you to this thing." And so off we went to Glendale, California, where this wedding was going to happen. And it was the night before, and honest to God, he did not sleep with me. The young man that brought me. He slept in a separate room. I slept on the couch. And in the morning, I had the little black book, the 24-hour day book. And I don't know if we still sell it in Alcoholics Anonymous. We do. Amen to that. And I was reading the reflection for that day. Well, it has a... it has the message and then a time for you to meditate. And during that time of my meditation, after reading the thought for the day, that's what it's called, during my meditation, in comes my father. And he's standing, and I'm sitting on the chair, on the couch, and the kitchen's like directly across, and there's a bar between us, thank God. Because my first impulse was to jump up and strangle him. But I sat there, and I sat on my hands like Patio had taught me, when the volcano starts to erupt, you sit on your hands, okay? You don't hit people, Cindy. And of course, she's a good one about that, she threw chairs at people. I seen her, okay? That one was for you, Patty. And so I sat on my hands, and I looked at this man, and he was pouring himself, he had a flask. And I can only imagine it had to be the highest proof, because that's us alcoholics, that's how we do things, And it was probably vodka, so that I wouldn't smell it on him. That old, like, you can't smell vodka, come on. You know what, when I detox, it came out every pore of my body, People thought I was drunk, and I was or drinking, and I would just it would just be pouring out of every pore, you know, because the liver stops detoxifying alcohol, and that's where he was, you know. And I was looking at him, I was watching him pour that drink, and then he put the little splash of coffee on it. And, you know, and I thought, you know, that's the way I would have done it. You know, this man, I must come from good stock, you know. And I looked at him, I says, you know, I got a lot of bitterness and a lot of hate towards you and a lot of resentment. And he says, I see that you're reading the 24-hour day book. And your mother and I went to Alcoholics Anonymous a long time ago in L.A., and we just didn't want what they had. And he goes, and I still don't want what they have, but it works. And I thought, how could he give me that message if he's still drinking? But he saw it in the people around him. You know, every meeting that he attended or that he had to attend, I don't know if they forced him or not, but they forced me. I imagine maybe somebody had a little nudge in there, probably God himself. And he said, we didn't stay because we didn't want it, and I want to die drunk. And then I saw the guilt that this man had to live with for 20 some odd years, 23 years, of not knowing his own kids. I saw that guilt, and you know what I had to do? I had to forgive that man. And instead of reaching over that counter like I wanted and strangling him, I came around it, and I said, I forgive you. I see that you have had to wear the guilt and the shame, and that's enough for me. You know, like, it had to be enough for me, people. I had to let go of that, and I gave him a hug, and we hugged, and I didn't get to ever hug him again, because the following July, he died of alcoholism. And I backtracked to my mother, who was also an alcoholic and an addict, and she got strung out on alcohol, and that's my choice of drink, my choice of drug. But I was also, like Mickey was talking about, I'm a trash can drunk. Anything that'll get me out of feeling will do. But alcohol was number one in my life. It was the center of my life for 23, well, I started at 11, for 12 years. But there was a lot of other stuff that I did. You know, I did it all. So if any of you are thinking about heroin, you don't have to do it, I did it for you. If you're thinking about crank, oh, it was called meth in my day. I slammed it for you. I snorted it for you. I sniffed it for you. I smoked it for you. You do not have to do that, okay? Amen, all right? And I was a wild one. You know, my first arrest was at 14. Okay, and I was trying to hide under a lowrider car. I was a lowrider at the time. I was hanging out with the lowriders. I had a short. Well, that's what we called them in the day. My short didn't have the lifts because I was in the poor section, you know, called the foster children, all living on welfare. Okay, I couldn't afford the lifts, you know, to do the little dances on the bumps that we would go. We would go cruising down Van Nuys Boulevard on every Tuesday night and Wednesday night. Van Nuys Boulevard cruiser, all right. You know what I'm talking about. And it was all about partying, okay? And then I'd hit the biker bar, which my brother was in, and he belonged at the time to Satan Slaves, which was really a wonderful place, okay? Boy, did I need God, you know, and God knew it, you know? And I think that's why I ended up in Alcoholics Anonymous, so I could find that power, which I choose to call God. But anyways, I was hiding under this thing because the party that I was at was supposed to be, I said to my foster parents, a cake and ice cream party. You know how we lie. You know? I mean, when you're an alcoholic and when you're born, and I believe I was born with a disease, you're an instant liar. You're just evil, you know? And you can shoot corners, you can steal, you can do everything wrong, Okay? And especially if you don't have somebody in your life that can show you a different way to live. You'll do what was being given to you, and that's what was given to me. And I hurt people because they hurt me. I was very abused in these homes, and I was very hurt. And I had a broken heart. And the broken heart came when my mother, after a year of recovery, she committed suicide. She drank one drink and took pills and was gone the next morning. And I just re-met my mother, and I was 12 going to 13 years of age. I would be 13 that year. And she had promised me one more time the moon, you know. And we're going to have a whole family back. She had my two brothers. I have an older brother and a younger brother. And she had my older sister. And my little sister and I were still in foster care. And she said the only reason why we were there because they didn't have big enough housing for us. But if I wanted to, I could leave that home and join them. But I knew the abuse in that home, and it was awful. And I couldn't leave my little sister there, and I was 12 years old making this decision, and I hated her for it. And I thought, I want to be with you, but I can't. I can't leave her back there to get hurt the way that I've been hurt and the way that she's been hurt anymore. I got to be in that gap. And I chose to go back into the foster care and live there until I was 18 years old. And then I had to leave her there, but I was there every weekend keeping an eye on those people. You better not hurt her, you know. And I love my little sister very much. Every one of us kids were alcoholic and addicts. And my brother, my oldest brother I just got reconnected with, spent most of his time in the penitentiary. And he just got out this year. It was a God pop. That's what I called miracles, a God pop. I went online and I started to look for my older brother as a Christmas gift to my real family, my sisters and brothers, because we had lost connection for 14, 15 years. My older sister had found me on Christmas Eve and left a message on my machine, which I called my whole household to sit at this table over here. There's three of them here. And I had them listen to that message, and my sister had found me. She said, if this is Sherry, then please call your older sister Mona. And I just hit the floor in tears. And so this year, I had that same opportunity to do that because we had lost connection with my older brother because of all the insanity that goes with alcohol and drugs. And he'd been locked up most of his life since the age of 14. He got kicked out of the state of California. They couldn't handle him. Us Bryans were very, very bad, okay? They couldn't handle him. They sent him away to Alabama to live with my father. He got to know my father more than anybody in my family. Then they allowed him back when he was 18, and him and I would go out partying. And I'll share just one little thing about his character, which is much like mine. If you see it and want it, you take it. Well, we had dropped some Quaaludes, and we'd been drinking, of course. Drinking came first for both of us. And we had done some Quaaludes, and that's like, you know, an elephant tranquilizer, okay? And I'm in the passenger seat, and he's driving I had a 61 Cadillac with the wings on the back, okay? With the gangster lean window, okay? And my arm hanging out all the time. Like that, you know? Cruising all the time. I had to get over cruising. I had a friend in AA. She said, Cindy, we've been in this parking lot for 20 minutes. Would you park the car? Quit cruising. You're no longer a low rider. You're a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I had to learn to stop that, okay? We had to unlearn what we've learned so that we can learn the new stuff given through Alcoholics Anonymous and the 12 steps. Well, anyways, We're on the freeway, the I-5 freeway, and if anybody's from California, you know that's a pretty big freeway, you know, it's like the major one. And we're thinking we're in the fast lane, okay? And we're driving along, and we're ripped. You know, I've run away from home, I decided, I was just before I was 18, I decided I'm not going back there. I was ripped, you know, I could care less about my little sister anymore. She went right out the window. Okay, I'm too high to care. You know, that's what alcohol and drugs do to you. It wipes out everybody that you love and care about. And I have this open bottle of wine, Almadine, dry. So if I had to drink wine, I had to drink the dry stuff. I didn't like that little fruity stuff, okay? And we had been drinking earlier the hardcore stuff, you know, the higher proof stuff, and then dropping the Quaaludes, well, that was quite a mix. And so you can see what we look like on the I-5, okay? And we're thinking we're in the fast lane, and we're going, I don't know where we're going. And all of a sudden, I hear this loudspeaker behind us, and I see the lights, you know, those red and blue lights flashing. And I hear the loudspeaker, "Do not pull over. You are in the emergency lane. Go to the right." And I thought we were in the fast lane, okay? And so did my brother. We would have plowed into the fence, but I did that for him later on in my story. I knocked down to 250 feet of fencing prior to getting to Alcoholics Anonymous. I should be dead 1,000 times over, if not more. And I'm sure that everybody here that's an alcoholic can relate to that, that we are blessed. I was kept alive, not by myself. It had to be a power greater than myself. No other power could do it. I couldn't stop my drinking. You know, when I first came in at first real meeting, when I came in, I felt less than zero. I felt like scum. You know, I had done everything that I thought I would never do. I've been in places where I thought I would never have gone. And I was sitting there feeling so low. And I'm certain that the women can understand what I'm talking about. I lost self-respect. I had no integrity. I was an animal, you know? And I was less than zero. And I sat on the floor. I wouldn't sit in the chair because I didn't feel like I belonged in one of their chairs. I was too dirty. I was too dirty to sit in their chair. And I sat in their chair and I rocked back and forth because I was detoxing. Precisely, it was like my first 90 days. And, you know, I was still detoxing. I detoxed in my two-car garage, which I ended up in, living in. And I was sitting there rocking and they read chapter 3. And, you know, if you're wondering what an alcoholic is, and I know Mickey had shared a little bit about it, but there's another portion in chapter 3 where it says, "We alcoholics are men and women who have lost the ability to control our drinking." And I thought, I am. I right then and there, there was no lurking reservation in my mind as to who I was. I was a real alcoholic. And so I kept coming back because that's what they told me to do. And eventually I got to sit in the chair. And eventually they told me to sit down because I kept going for coffee, you know. And we get hooked into that coffee thing, you know. We go one addiction to another, okay. Coffee and cigarettes, okay, were my thing in my early recovery. But prior to getting there, I had to do a lot of unlawful things and pay the price, you know. It's always the drunken Cindy. The next morning, the sober Cindy that's coming to paid the price. And there were a lot of times, there were five occasions where I woke up behind bars going, "Wow, which one am I in? What county?" You know? And one time I woke up in solitary confinement, I thought, "Oh, this is bad." You know? And this little guard lit this little window. I mean, it was a solid door, you couldn't see out. Cement floor, I was on the floor. There's a drainage hole right by my face, you know. The bed was cement, okay? There was no cushiony little cot, okay? in his jail. It was Ventura Woman's County Division, thank you very much. Anyways, I found myself on the floor with these lips that were moving. Are you ready to cooperate now? And so immediately, I looked around the room. Well, there was somebody else there but me, okay? So I thought, okay, I have not cooperated. What have I done? Oh, geez. What have I done now? I hope I didn't kill anybody. You know, because I had that always, you know, we always had that worry. I was a blackout drinker, and driving and drinking in a blackout, you know, could kill some innocent human being. And by the grace of God, that never happened. And it really was by the grace of God, because I always drove under the influence of 0.26 alcohol level. I had a 0.26 alcohol level after 12 hours of not drinking, because I refused to give my blood one time until I found out I was on violation. And so they came in, immediately grabbed my arm, drew my blood, and they were pissed at me. They held me in San Diego County for 3 days because I was a bad girl and not following directions, okay, and not telling them the truth. I wouldn't blow up the balloon, I wouldn't urinate in their bottle, and I would not give them my blood, because I knew, you know, after knocking down 250 feet of the 805 freeway, that's like going to Tijuana, okay, I don't know where, I missed my off-ramp. I lived in San Juan Capistrano. I actually lived in Capistrano Beach at the time. Okay, that's like 2 hours away. Obviously missed my off-ramp, okay? I had left a family reunion, and always when us kids would get together in our partying days, one of us would end up in jail. Well, it was my night. I came to across that freeway, being held down by some woman, I don't know who she was, I still don't know, holding my head down on the floorboard in the back seat, going, they're looking for you, dear. And so I kind of creeped up and I looked and I saw my Vega Camback, which was newly purchased, okay, which I didn't have full coverage on, all right? So I had to pay the price on that one. I continued to pay the price, even though I totally demolished that car. If you can imagine 11 poles being pulled out of the ground, cement, to 11 poles, a chain link fence, being pulled out of that ground, out of the ground, and me crossing the 805 freeway and ending up in this woman's car has to be a God pop. Okay, because I should have been dead and maybe at the first pole, you know. But I looked and I thought, oh my God, I've done it. I've done it again. You know, my prayer every time I got into jail, because there was more in between there, and I'm not going to go into that, because I think my last drunk driving tells my real story about how alcoholism is a disease that's progressive. If you do not get recovery, it will progress. It never gets better. Never. And I hope you walk away knowing that in your heart, you know, so that you don't leave these rooms, and that you keep coming back. But I creeped up and I looked and I thought, oh my God, I have to go. And she says, you're crazy, you know. It's like she was trying to talk me out of it. She was going to get me out of there, you know. They don't know who the driver is they're looking for. I said, it's me. And so I hobbled out of the car and crossed that freeway, not getting hit, probably because there was too many emergency vehicles around and cops looking for Cindy B. And I just walked across and they knew immediately who was the driver, okay? And I don't know what I look like, but I know I was probably all over that freeway and trying to get to. I'm responsible. I'm the one that did this. I didn't even have to raise my hand. They just handcuffed me, threw me in the back of the police car. And this guy, he had one of them state troopers cap on, you know, and the funky looking. Not a regular cop cap, okay? And so I was pretty close to the state line. I can only imagine. And he put his car in reverse and he started to count the poles. that had knocked out of the ground. No, and I was sitting in his back seat, now awake. It came to out of a blackout. And he's counting those poles, and he went like this. 1, 2, geez, woman. 3, 4, 5. Oh, my God, woman. 6, 7. Oh, I can't believe you're alive. 8, 9. Oh, this is something else. 11. You're going to jail. Oh, boy, are you going to jail. I say, I know that. There are no door handles on the back of this police car, okay? If I thought I could escape, there was no delusion in that, okay? When I was 14, I looked for them. They weren't there, you know? So I had that experience. I knew I couldn't escape. And I didn't really want to. It was like, you know, I knew in my heart, man, that something had to get different or I was going to die. You know, and I even became comfortable with the idea of dying drunk, you know. And that's where my alcoholism took me. I don't know how much more time I have here. Are you going to throw a dart at me? That's what they did to the speaker last night, I think. Did they do that to you, Vicky? Or no, it was to you. Yeah. Did it hurt? Oh, okay. Okay. I can use a little deflation of the ego, okay? Always. But I stood in front of that judge 3 days later because they wouldn't let me out of the holding cell because I was a bad girl. And I didn't tell them the truth. And, of course, you know, they make you pay a price when they're mad at you. And on my other bookings, you know, I always got them pissed off at me. So every time I got out of jail, I was beaten up because I would do this number to them in the camera. In booking, okay? They don't like that. You know? And one night on a double arrest, see, I had gotten my first drunk driving. I was 18 years old. And I was at a substation in Simi Valley, California. And then it released me out of OR. I was in a blackout. And my cousin came to pick me up to take me home. And on my way out, I came to enough to see the arresting officer, so you know what I did. I rolled up my fist, and I clocked him one right in the face. And boy, were they all over me, handcuffing me again. And this time, they shipped me to the Ventura Woman's Department, which was 40 miles away from home. And I woke up, it was July the 4th, and they let me out of there. But you know, the guard that, or the booking officer from that night, from the previous night, she said to me, Cindy, you don't know where you're at, do you? Because I stepped outside and I saw the ocean. Okay, Simi Valley doesn't have the ocean, okay? You have to go to the ocean. And I thought, oh my God, where am I? And I'm standing here, and I must have looked like this. And I had a heck of a hangover, man. You know, I was like pounding, and I'm thinking, where am I? You know, and so the booking officer from that night that had beat me up, she apologized, by the way. But she had just got off work, and she said, Cindy, you don't know where you're at, do you? And I said, no, I honestly don't. If you could point me to the freeway, I can hitchhike home. Because nobody was coming for me anymore. And so she said, I want you to know, I'm sorry, I'm the one that put the bruises all over you. She said, but Cindy, you're not supposed to smile in a booking thing. You know, you're supposed to keep like this, you know, straight face, and look mean, I guess. And I was smiling. And she said, you know, by the sixth time, I got a little irritated, so I jumped you and beat the hell out of you. And she did. She really whooped my tush, you know. I made it to the freeway like, oh, my God, this woman did hurt me, you know. And as if I wasn't hurt enough anyways. My mother did get sober in Alcoholics Anonymous for a year in 1969. She was in the first recovery house in LA County for women. And I went there. I was 11 years old at the time. and went there because she was getting her first year chip. And so later on that year, I got to spend my first Christmas with my siblings and my real mother and her new husband, who was an Alcoholics Anonymous, who had 3 years. And 30 days later, she drank and dropped those pills and didn't come to you in the morning. And that broke my heart, you know. And on the streets, I had a saying, because my heart was already broken from being torn apart. You know, when you get torn apart from your family and from everything you know, even though it's bad, what I got into was worse than what I had. So I thought, and it broke my heart. And I used to walk around and say, you can't break my heart. It's already broken. And you know what? Through Alcoholics Anonymous, I have a heart, I have a love, I have a compassion for the still sick and suffering alcoholic and for the newcomers that come into the Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, and for us old timers also. Because, you know, if it wasn't for the old timers, I'd had nothing to go on. And, you know, I'm pretty ugly without something to go on, okay? About 10 more minutes? Okay. I'm going to read in closing, and I hope that my talk or whatever came out of my mouth. I prayed before, and so if you have a beef with something that I've said, you talk to my God, as I understand, and yell at him, okay? Don't yell at me. It's his fault, okay? I never open my mouth without asking God for the words to touch the people's hearts that he brings into these rooms. And that's been a commitment of mine since I found God in Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's what we're supposed to do. And this is how I'm going to end it. It's in our big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, page 164. And it's a vision for you. And that's my favorite chapter. I wanted to have a license plate with an A, B, I, J, O, N, 4, U. A Y. I always wanted to have that license plate. Maybe someday when I'm able to drive again, I'll get that license plate. But that is my favorite chapter in the whole book, because you know what? It gave me that hope. There's that hope. This is the hope. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know little. God will constantly reveal more or disclose more to you and to us. We ask him in our morning meditation what we can do each day for the man who is sick. That's what I did this morning. And that's what I do every time I open my mouth in an AA meeting. The answers will come if your own house is in order. Obviously, you cannot transmit something you have not got. See to it that your relationship with him, and they're referring to God as you understand him here, is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is a great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand him. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear the wreckage of your past. Amen, huh? Don't have to carry it anymore, babies. Freely give of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit. And you will surely meet some of us, all of us, as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you. Until then, you never have to go back to that pit of hell from which you came. I have not had a drink since 1979, and I don't ever want to return to that pit of hell from which I came. And I pray for every one of you that you don't ever go back out that door, because you may not come back. And you know what? There are a lot of us here and a lot of old timers that That would break our hearts. That would break our hearts if you go back out there and don't come back. I've had many women in Alcoholics Anonymous that I sponsor go back out there and die by the sword. And it hurts. I want you to know it hurts when you go back out there. Every time you go back out there, you're hurting a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, because we want you to have the greatest gift that God has given us. Thank you for allowing me to share.
We hope you enjoyed this recording. If you are interested in other speaker tapes or CDs from AA or Al-Anon, please contact us at Sound Solutions, toll free 1-877-893-2777, or visit us on the web at soundsolutionsrecording.com. We are also available to cover your recording and sound system needs. Thank you for allowing us to be of service and carrying the message.
Kick me too hard.
I won't kick okay.
you. Okay. Liar. I'm Cindy and I'm alcoholic.
Hi, Cindy.
Is that loud enough?
Cindy. Lots and lots and lots.
Oh! We love you too. Yeah. What an awesome crowd. It's been an awesome conference. I've never been so filled with such vigor and excitement. And I'm also nervous. We have to be honest here. That's what really works, is honesty. I wanted to start off today, and I hope that the camera can pick this up. But on the top of this, oh, that one's pretty close to me. Okay, I'm back this one off. Go away. No. Back away from Cindy. Okay. On the top of this is a picture. This came from Patty O in California. I know most of you know her because she has been many times asked to speak in various different cities and states. And she was my second AA sponsor, and she gave this to me at 2 years clean and sober. On the top was my favorite beer, and was called Budweiser Malt Liquor. Okay, a highest proof, that's what I always went for. And on below is a picture of me at 25, sitting next to my first AA sponsor, who was Nancy Ann. And the lady sitting next to her was also a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, who came in right around the same time I did. She may have had a few months, or maybe, I don't know, it's been so long. We get old and we forget, okay? And I like to read what she had to say on this plaque. And I pray that all of you will take this to heart. What we think we want keeps us from having the alcohol. What we don't know exists. It keeps getting different. I wanted to share that first with you because it does keep getting different. You'll hear people say in Alcoholics Anonymous, it gets better. And some people like me, no hope Cindy, when I came in, I didn't see anything getting any better, okay? For 5 years, I was still on probation, formal probation. And it was... I just didn't see any hope. And so she, instead of saying, you know, it's going to get better, because that would be the hope, she told me it will get different and it'll continue to get different. And I thank her for that. Patty, that one was for you. I have to send her this. She's double checking up on me. I know she is. I also wanted to read, first off, out of Dr. Bob's story. I marked it. Please let me find it. Give me a moment here. The first 6 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. Where are you, doctor? Here we go. You know, it's funny because I opened up to it right this morning, and I think it's very pertinent to know that Alcoholics Anonymous was started between 2 men, Dr. Bob and Bill Wilson, and it wasn't in an AA group like we have today. There was no Alcoholics Anonymous then. And these are the steps that they took to keep themselves sober. And then they expanded so that they can reach more of us from all denominations, from all parts of the world, 90 countries, okay? And I just love it because it's so very pertinent. Like I said, I'm sorry, I'm repeating myself. Help, where's Dr. Bob? It's after Bill's story, it's gotta be after Bill's story. Teresa, help me here.
What are you doing?
You'll have to excuse me because I've had a heck of a medical year and it hasn't gone well with me.
What are you looking for? Okay, it's Dr. Bob's.
Nightmare?
Dr. Bob's.
Is it the first story in the back of the
book? It is in the first
row. Okay. Oh, here we go. Thank you, JP.
Wow, that's
pretty cool. Okay, cool. The first step was complete deflation. And you know what that means, that ego, that egocentric person that we come in with. Deflate is a pretty powerful word to me. I don't know why it speaks to you. Dependence, number 2, dependence and guidance from a higher power. 3, a moral inventory. 4, confession. 5, restitution. 6, continue to work with other alcoholics. And this alcoholic's been clean and sober for 28 years, and when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous at 23 years old, they told me I never, ever had to go back out there to the pit of hell from which I came. And I believed them. Because I thought, if this thing doesn't work, I want to say a bad word, but if this thing doesn't work, I'm really screwed, okay? If this thing called Alcoholics Anonymous does not work for me, I'm dead. But you know, quite frankly, there was one point in my life, just prior to getting to AA, I was coming in on a court card. It was probably in the beginning of the court card scene, because I'm a dinosaur. And I saw people sober, and I thought, I walked away from my first AA, actual having the card signed once by me actually handing it over. After that, I sent boyfriends in. I had other people that I knew sign it because I didn't get sober on that court card, okay? The judge gave me 15 meetings to do in 90 days. It took me a year and a half. Okay, I was not a willing participant. a total rebellious human being. And I think most of us can relate to that. You know, we'll do everything that everybody tells us not to, okay? And it feels good when we're doing it. And that's the way I felt. I don't know about you, that's the way I felt. Nobody could tell me how to run my life at the age of 11. You know, at 11, I decided, this is my life, I'm gonna live it the way I choose fit. and my world was filled with alcoholism and drug addiction. Both of my parents were alcoholics, and my mother was an addict. I don't know about my father too much. He was removed out of my life at a very early age. I did get to meet him in recovery, and I do want to mention this, because it's very pertinent, and part of my recovery is to forgive, you know, and to forget, and to let it go, you know, because you can't hang on to resentments. It's a luxury we cannot afford, you know. And I always thought about, I mean, when they used to say that in AA meeting, you know, it's a luxury, I used to think about Cindy, the trophy, and all the garbage that was inside her that had been spilling over for 23 years. And when I came here, the doctor told me, and he said, before I got here, a year and a half before I got here, the doctor said, Cindy, if you don't stop drinking, and within 6 months' time, you will be dead. You will kill your liver. You will be dead. And I outlived that, you know, because that's how we are, aren't we? Aren't we persistent? We are very persistent people. And I'm very persistent in my recovery as well, and I'm blessed with that gift, because I believe that is a God-given gift for each one of us, and our gift back to Him is our recovery, you know, and helping others to achieve sobriety. So I knew I couldn't hold on to any resentment, and so I had an opportunity. And I came in June 30th, 1979. And in October, my older brother was getting married, and my father was flying in from Alabama, and I hadn't seen him, like I said, since an infant. And I hated him, because I grew up in foster care. He never wrote back to me. You know, I write him things in crayons, and you know, as a little kid, and he never wrote back. He never sent a birthday card. He never sent a Christmas card. He just, like, didn't have anything to do with his five kids. And it broke my heart, and I hated his guts, and I thought for sure that when I met him, I was going to rip his face off. That's how I felt. I was so angry, okay? And I went to a woman's meeting in San Clemente, California, where, hey, all right. I'm having a hard time because I have MS. They've diagnosed MS and degenerative disc disease, which I've had for quite a while, and it gets a little painful. So if I get up and down like a yo-yo, like I used to be when I first came in, just remember I'm sober 28 years, okay? But I thought for sure I was going to rip this man a new one, you know. I mean, I clobbered cops. You know, and there was no limit to my anger. There was no cap, ceiling, or anything, okay? If you got my way, I hurt you, you know, because people hurt me. And I felt like there was none of you that I liked. I don't like anybody. And that's the way I came into Alcoholics Anonymous. Very hateful, very angry, and you know what? So full of denial, I didn't think I was any of those things.